This is 89.9 WWNO. It's Fat Tuesday, the ultimate day for creative expression. And we're talking all things Mardi Gras. New king cake entries, carnival throws, Mardi Gras' environmental impact, a sneak peek at the King's Ball, and more are in the mix. Come along for the thrill of the ride as we go inside the arts. I'm your host, Diane Mack. Mardi Gras 2020 is here. It's the ultimate street party where you can let your hair down, toss your cares to the wind, and be whoever or whatever you want to be. But this year's celebration starts on a somber note. As the city witnessed tragic accidents last week, parade-related deaths of revelers just days apart involving carnival floats. Before we begin our journey, I'd like to take a moment for silence to pay respect to those who lost their lives and family members who lost their loved ones. As we move forward together now, please be safe and enjoy the experience of the greatest free show on earth. Did Mardi Gras begin early for you? Were you lucky enough to see King Zulu and his queen? Perhaps you caught a coveted hand-painted Zulu coconut. If you got up early enough, you might have spied the beautifully costumed Mardi Gras Indians making their way through neighborhoods. Their elaborate hand-sewn, feathered, and beaded suits take a full year to make. The pride rival Indian tribes from different wards in the city exude when they come together on Mardi Gras morning is captured in song on a newly released single from the 79ers gang called 79ers About to Blow.
'79ers about to blow. I know we done came pushed in the door. For sure, playing with the gang, we holding court. And they know where I'm from, we trying to go.
Say I'm a young big chief, I'm down in New Orleans, and I be ringing them drums and them tambourines. I you kneeling straight, just to sew my suit on the Mardi Gras morning, I be offering.
79 about to blow. I know we can't push in the door.
Back on St. Charles Avenue, crowds hailed Rex as a procession of the King of Carnival's hand-painted and sculpted floats navigated the avenue. To enjoy Mardi Gras, you really have to pace yourself, as the sights, sounds, and of course, food all vie for your attention. Speaking of food, this year's carnival season welcomed a new host of king cakes. Food writer Ian McNulty found some cross-cultural entries to excite your taste buds.
King cake can be a symbol of home. Just ask anyone who grew up with the carnival treat as a natural part of their own New Orleans culture. Or maybe ask someone making a home here, blending different cultures along the way. Consider the Tres Leches King Cake, a new addition in the ever-changing King Cake Kingdom from Ideal Market, or Ideal, the local grocery chain where Spanish is often the first language. This tres leches cake is encased in a coating of purple, green, and gold, gleaming like a glossy custom paint job right out of the shop. Bite in, and the namesake Three Milks instantly drench your palate with toasty, subtly caramelized, extravagantly creamy flavors. Carnival purists might point out that this is not traditional king cake, but instead a carnival-themed tres leches cake. Fair enough. But set one down on the table, and it vividly proclaims the Mardi Gras spirit. And maybe even the spirit of the American melting pot. There's another example at Norma's Sweets Bakery in Mid-City, a Latin grocery that introduced its own cross-cultural king cake a few years back. This one starts with New Orleans king cake and adds seams of cream cheese and guava paste. It has a mellow sweet flavor with a mild tanginess and tropical brightness. The New Orleans king cake is closely related to the Rosca de Reyes, traditional cakes in Spain and Latin America for the Epiphany. Locally, both Ideal Market and Norma's prepare their Rosca de Reyes in early January, then switch to their New Orleans king cakes through the end of carnival season. As they bring more Latin flavors into the mix, they're also demonstrating an enduring strength of New Orleans culture, the way it's encompassing within our community, adaptable to change, and reliably alluring to those who get a taste. People want in. After all, anyone can take pleasure from New Orleans food. It means something more when you can add to it. For WWNO, I'm Ian McNulty.
Ian McNulty covers dining and food culture for the Times-Picayune, the New Orleans Advocate. Right about now, the truck parades are making their way down St. Charles Avenue, driving the crowds wild with what seems like endless carnival throws.
Hey now, mister, throw me something, mister. You got what I need. If I take off my bra, hand it to you right now. Throw me some of your Mardi Gras beef. Hey now, mister, I know your sister from down at the bar. She said if I moon, you would throw me the blues. Hurry, hurry, got to catch my streetcar. I'm walking down St. Charles Avenue, mask covering my face. Places I ain't never, but a Mardi Gras is not a disgrace. Hey now, mister, throw me something, mister. What do I have to give up? I got to wiggle when I walk and do a second line strut just to get a Zulu coconut.
That was an original song from jazz vocalist Sybil Gage, who happens to be my sister. As your catch of plastic throws grow, do you ever wonder what happens to what's left behind in the streets? Where it ends up might surprise you. To cut back on litter, the city of New Orleans banned parade riders from throwing the plastic bags that beads are packaged in. But many environmentalists say that's not enough. Reporter Betsy Shepard traces Mardi Gras' environmental footprint from parade floats to coastal fisheries.
Every year, millions of pounds of plastic throws flood the streets of New Orleans for its Fat Tuesday festivities. And many of those beads and trinkets turn into litter or landfill waste almost immediately.
Our family went to the parade route, Mardi Gras Day, the year after the BP oil spill, and we were all just dumbfounded that we were surrounded by petroleum products.
That's Holly Grow, a mom and physician who became concerned in 2010 about the environmental impacts of all that plastic pollution. She and her husband Kirk founded Verdi Gras, or Green Gras, to rethink the holiday's excessive waste.
We decided to start putting the idea out there that we didn't need all this stuff. We wanted a sustainable Mardi Gras that we could all enjoy.
As Holly Grow would soon discover, these plastic beads weren't just wasteful, but also potentially toxic. She traced the plastic imports to Chinese factories and was alarmed to find out that the shipments contained so many toxic chemicals they couldn't pass through California because of state health regulations. She teamed up with Tulane pharmacologist Howard Milkey to find out what exactly was in the beads.
They have a lot of different components that are very toxic, such as lead and other metals and flame retardants.
Dr. Milkey found trace amounts of toxic chemicals, but trace amounts found in mass volume, like the millions of pounds of Mardi Gras beads, can add up to significant environmental contamination, he says.
when they undergo any kind of weathering, the material that's in the bead will end up in those landfills. They do leach and they do end up in the water table.
Beads that don't make it into the landfill might have a more direct environmental impact. In 2018, workers found 93,000 pounds of beads caught up in the city's storm drains. But no one knows how many pounds of beads pass through the drains into local waterways each year.
From the storm sewers, they go into their pumping system and potentially pumped out into the canals and ultimately the river.
That's Mark Benfield, an oceanography professor at Louisiana State University. Benfield's been using drones and skimming nets to survey plastic pollution in the Gulf of Mexico. And he's found the Gulf to have one of the world's highest concentrations of microplastics, which are harmful bits of plastic 5 millimeters or less in diameter, about the size of a Mardi Gras bead. Research from one of Benfield's colleagues at LSU found high levels of plastic in local seafood. Benfield says that's because the shiny beads look and smell tasty to marine life.
There's lots of fish that will feed on the seabed, and these beads are going to pass those pollutants on to the fish.
Scientists say it can take hundreds of years for those beads to biodegrade. Compare that to the one-time use of most Mardi Gras throws. New Orleans infrastructure chief Ramsey Green says we have to make Mardi Gras more sustainable.
We're a city very vulnerable to climate change, and we need to be smarter about these environmental threats.
The city recently passed a rule that prohibits riders from throwing the plastic bags that beads are packaged in. But Green says, don't expect the city to regulate the beads anytime soon.
I would say that's entirely on the cruise. There are a lot of stakeholders in Mardi Gras.
Over the last 10 years of trying to make Mardi Gras more green, Holly Groh has seen small amounts of progress. She's glad for the city's bag ban, but she says it's the millions of pounds of plastic that come in the bags that's the real problem. In New Orleans, I'm Betsy Shepherd.
You can find out about bead recycling and other ways to make Mardi Gras more green at verdigras.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The revelry shifts downtown and into the French Quarter after the truck parades end their run on St. Charles Avenue. There's more partying on Bourbon Street, and you may wonder what is the big finale to Mardi Gras. Well, time-honored traditions, the Rex Ball and the meeting of the courts of Rex and Comus, put a glittery spin on the end of the greatest free show on earth. The event is televised live on PBS station WYES-TV and is hosted by Peggy Scott Laborde, Errol Laborde, and Rex archivist Dr. Stephen Hales. Peggy Scott Laborde is here with a preview of tonight's events. Peggy, welcome.
Thank you very much. All the little details coming together for the quickest 3 hours and 45 minutes. It does go fast. It really does, I promise.
You know, I believe Mardi Gras is one of the longest days of the year, and it's still early. Are you pacing yourself before tonight's lengthy celebration?
Yes, we're so looking forward to it. This is the 23rd time WYES has taken on this project of broadcasting live the entire Rex Ball and the meeting of the courts of Rex and Comus, and we're thrilled to do it. We also are streamed on YouTube if you're outside of our viewing area. It's really interesting. We were able to track the different countries of people who are watching, and last year was over 40 countries.
Wow.
Including France. I'm not surprised by that one.
What are the challenges, Peggy, of covering an event like this?
Well, you know, first of all, you have to have a really good team, and we're very fortunate to have Barbara Sillery, who I've worked together for quite a while, and Jim Moriarty, and this just amazing staff who have worked with it for many, many years. So we know what to expect. It's a live production, so you really have to be on your toes. The organizations give us what we call a cue sheet, so we know what's kind of going to happen. And there are many traditions. Some things don't change in that respect. We also, if you watch the show, we pepper it with historical features, some unusual photographs. And when I say unusual, I mean rare photographs of Carnival's past, which are quite exciting too, to me.
Now, where does it all take place?
Well, it takes place in two places. I, you know, still bemoan that we can't go to the auditorium because that would have been wonderful. And in the early days we did. But the Rex Ball is actually held at the Sheraton Hotel on historic Canal Street. Rex starts at 8, but we go on at 7:30 because we have the pre-ball show and we're telling you about the day and lots of other great carnival tidbits. And then actually Coma starts at 9, and they're across the street at the Marriott. And so at some point, weather permitting, the Court of Rex will go across the street on a red carpet and travel over after their ball over to Comas. And that's where we have the historic meeting of the courts. But it's so much more than that. We have interviews with carnival royalty, past and present, all kinds of good things.
Now, we all know Rex is the king of carnival. Who is Comas?
Comas is a god, so technically he's not a king. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's, you know, interested in mythology, he is the god of revelry and mirth and a little bit of a trickery there, too, but primarily revelry. The only problem with Comas is if you would run into Comas in the forest, shall we say, and if he offers you a taste from his cup, better not to take a sip. Because from the mythological standpoint, the story goes, if you do, your head will turn into the form of a beast, and that's not good.
Well, thanks for the heads up, so to speak. So tell us, what is the experience of the meeting of the courts of Rex and Comas?
Since 1882, Rex has traveled, you know, in those early days across town because they both had their balls in different parts of town. But Rex bows to Comas because Comas is a god.
Ah.
It's so fun. And that's, as I say, a really historic meeting. On TV, many of us, especially if you're a baby boomer, grew up with seeing it on TV on Channel 6. For many, many years, we were glad to see it. From a technical standpoint, it was just two or three cameras. It was on the Comas side. They didn't cover the Rex Ball, but we appreciated what they did. We have gotten a little bit more fancier, if you will. So we have TV units on both the Comas side and the Rex side.
Can you tell us about this year's King and Queen of Carnival? Who are they?
Well, we're glad to say that the Carnival Queen is Sarah Eleanor Lane. This is Rex, Queen of Carnival. And Mr. Story Charbonnet is our king.
And what can you tell us about Comas?
We never know. Now, I'm sure they're in the inner sanctum, folks know, but I usually never know who Comas is. He remains anonymous.
It's never revealed?
No, some people even at the ball don't know. However, we do find out who the Queen of Comas is tonight. Now, let me explain our logistics. We actually have a stage, a small stage. If you were in the ballroom at the Sheraton, the Grand Ballroom at Rex, we would be off to the right, kind of hidden, hopefully. So we are to the right of the throne. So when we take you to the Comas Ball, we are taking you there electronically. We're watching on a big screen, pretty much what you're watching, mm-hmm. Because we can't physically be in two places at once.
At one time, yeah. Tell us about the ball this year. What will be the music?
Well, starting last year at the Rex Ball are members of the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra. That certainly adds a different sound to it. And I understand they're adding one more trumpeter. And so I think it's more of a 19th century sound, more of a classical sound, if you will. And then on the Comas side is the Jimmy Maxwell Orchestra, conducted by his son Robert. And they are more traditional, like big band kind of sound. And that's a wonderful sound, too.
Now, as you look back over the history of the Rex organization, what will be the focus this year?
When we have a chance, we will show some historic features about the histories of Rex and Comas. Every year, we have a tradition. We do Carnival 50 and 100 years ago. And I love that. For those of you who may not recall, 100 years ago, you know, it was just right after World War I, and General Pershing was a special guest. We tell you about what went on 50 years ago as well. And then we also have a feature that Will French is narrating and producing. Will is with the Rex organization. He'll be with us too. He talks about the artistry of Carnival. This year, Rex has gone to a new float builder, Royal Artists. And there's more of sort of a throwback to the artistry of yesteryear, such as handmade paper mache figures as opposed to fiberglass.
Yeah,
even though
nice.
I've always thought Rex was lovely, you know. But the traditions of the building of them, the colors are a little bit different. They're a little bit more vibrant this year as well. One of my favorite aspects of the Rex Parade are the flowers, the beautiful flowers. And I think they look a little bit more three-dimensional this year, too.
Do you continue to discover something new as you cover this event each year?
yes, you know, we always like to have little tidbits about Carnival's past. And in just a little history, it's the 70th anniversary of the visit of the Duke and Duchess of Windsor to Rex. The big eternal question was, well, who bowed to whom? And indeed, the Duke and Duchess bowed to Rex and his queen. So I thought that was great fun. Also, we really give you an up-close look at the incredibly beautiful gowns of the queens. So much care is taken, and Suzanne Perron St. Paul designed both of them this year for both Rex and Comus. And when you see the detail and the materials used, I think that's really interesting, too. People want to know, you know, what are they wearing? Also, there are maids presented in both Rex and Comus. They're debutantes who were also presented at Rex. And when you read their bios, these are very thoughtful, sharp young ladies. And it's fun to see what they're involved in from a civic activity standpoint, too.
Is there a funny story that you can tell us, maybe, from a prior year
that sticks with you? One thing that I think is especially cute is that there's always a great story, you know, of the parents of the queens. Like, how did you tell them that they were going to be queen? And Rex actually shared this, the parents of the Queen of Rex, Queen of Carnival, did it through a PowerPoint. They handed Miss Lane this a little computer and a laptop and said, you know, like, hello, we have something to show you. I'm sure there's more to the story, but I didn't see a picture of that. I just thought that was so darling. We're getting high tech.
So, Peggy, how can listeners view the broadcast?
WYES Channel 12 in the viewing area, and we broadcast to the southeastern portion of Louisiana and then on cable on the Gulf Coast. But go to YouTube. You can see it there. It would be easy to go. If you go to WYES On Demand, you see our local shows. But I'm sure if you type in Rex Ball, it'll come up that way, too. And it can be seen all over the world. It's amazing.
WYES TV host Peggy Scott Laborde. Thanks so much and happy Mardi Gras.
My pleasure and happy Mardi Gras to you.
Thank you. Mardi Gras is officially over at midnight, giving way to the beginning of the Christian period of Lent on Ash Wednesday. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Le Petit Theater. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back next week with more ideas for your artistic palette. Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.